evening, everybody, and welcome to Carving It Up Live right here on Twitter, as well as the Carving It Up YouTube channel and the Grid Network YouTube channel. As always, I am Bryson Carver. What a weekend we had in the world of sports. Listen, mostly blowout NBA games, but listen, hey, the Red Sox got a sweep over the weekend in Pittsburgh, okay? I don't know how much I'm going to like Russell Wilson with my Pittsburgh Steelers, but I have a feeling that somehow he inserted some bad juju with the Pirates that helped the Red Sox sweep the series. So, I already like Russell Wilson. I just don't know if I like him as a Steeler. Only time will tell there. We got a loaded show today, okay? Why I do not buy into the Clippers one iota, despite their blowout win of the Dallas Mavericks in game one without Mr. Kawhi Leonard himself. Get to that and more as it surrounds James Harden than anybody. Also going to get into Dak Prescott, who, by Dak Prescott standards, I thought made a pretty firm statement at a charity event over the weekend that I'll get into in about 15 minutes. Very excited to talk about that. Also, why I still do not buy into the Bucks. Minnesota, I'm still a little iffy on, and I think the Patriots should trade the third pick of the draft. I've thought about it over the weekend, and I've come to the conclusion, yeah, New England just needs to go ahead and move this pick. I will talk about that later in the show as well. So we got a ton of stuff, a lot of NBA playoff stuff, but there's no other way to start than with the most notable playoff series thus far. But first, so the Nuggets took care of business in game one. Protected home court, beat the Lakers by a final score of 114-103. Nikola Jokic did Nikola Jokic things. He was not only the best player on the floor, but he's obviously the best player in the world. If we could pull up Mr. Jokic's stats here, scored 32 points in this basketball game. And I was watching throughout, and I had my eye on all the games. I really enjoyed the Sixers and Knicks game, Madison Square Garden, fantastic atmosphere at MSG. I'll talk about Embiid later in the show. And I was watching this one. I'm saying, okay, Denver's more rested, but listen, we know rest, it can sometimes coincide, or not coincide, sometimes the rust can play factor if you're off too long. Lakers play Tuesday, they get enough rest, enough time to reacclimate themselves to the Denver climate and altitude. Show up, and I think LeBron James. Now, LeBron James, to me, historically treats game ones the way that Bill Belichick and Tom Brady treated game ones during the Patriot dynasty. Or not game ones, but September's. Tom and Bill would look at September as like, you know what? Obviously, we want to win these games, but this is kind of an extension of the preseason. We're going to tinker with stuff, see what works. You know, we may get blown out in a Monday night game against the Kansas City Chiefs Arrowhead, and people are calling for Tom's benching, and Belichick doesn't know what he's doing. But come October, come Halloween, come Thanksgiving, we're going to go back, and we're going to be great shape, probably fighting. Definitely, we're going to win the AFC East easily and be fighting for the one seed and a chance at another Super Bowl title. That, to me, is how LeBron treats game once, historically at least. Certainly prime LeBron did, where it's like, okay, I can sort of feel this out for 48 minutes, see what the other team is, where they're at, what they're trying to run against us, what we're running against them, what works, what doesn't. Then come game two, it's on. Now, LeBron wins some game ones, he loses some game ones. This, to me, was different, though, for LeBron James. Because I think initially it was a little bit of a feel-out process, where he says, okay, Denver, at one point in the first quarter, shoots 41%. We're shooting 62%. We hold leads of 8 and 12 at points in the first half. Jamal Murray, now he had 7 assists in the first half to his credit, but 3 for 11 for the field. I think LeBron James saw that and said, okay, Jamal's struggling. We saw what he did last year. That ain't going to happen very often. We are out shooting them from the field, from 3, from 2. That's not going to happen very often. Certainly in Denver, I got to go for the jugular. And that's exactly what LeBron James did. We could show you stats in the first half. LeBron James, 19 points, 5 assists, 3 rebounds, 7 for 10 from the field. That'll work, 70%. 100% of his three-pointers, including a bomb at the end of the first half from Curry range, went 3 for 3 from 3, went 2 for 2 from the free throw line in 20 minutes. LeBron was dominating, balling. The Lakers had 8-point leads and 12-point leads. And at one point, Denver was shooting 41%. Lakers were shooting 62%. And they led by 3 at the half. By the way, making this even worse, Jamal's not playing well. LeBron's playing great. AD's playing great. If you combine LeBron James and Anthony Davis's numbers, it adds up to 30 in the first half. 37, 10, and 8 on 14 of 21 from the field, 3 for 3 from three-point range, and 6 for 6 from the free throw line. So LeBron and AD were great. AD was going at Jokic. LeBron was hitting perimeter shots, getting to the rim with ease, getting to the foul line. And they led by three at the half. D'Angelo Russell, that's the problem. Okay, so when I predicted this series and I said Nuggets in five, out of pure respect for LeBron James, I'm like, the man's not going to get swept back-to-back series. I get it's the same opponent. I get Denver's clearly and objectively better than the Lakers. He's not going to get swept twice. But when I picked Denver in five, I said, you know, the argument was, well, the Lakers can win because D'Angelo Russell can't possibly be as bad as he was in last year's Western Conference Finals. Well, he really was. As a matter of fact, he was actually in some ways better last night than he was that series if you look at certain numbers. But Lakers fans said, hey, if D'Lo just steps up, oh, we got something special going on here. You know, one thing I like to do on my show, or I've started to do on my show as of late, blind reveals. Right, where I have one athlete on one side and another athlete on the other side, and it often sort of defeats our preconceived notions about how we view certain narratives on certain players. Let's go to a blind reveal with a blind resume with D'Angelo Russell, okay? D'Lo in game one versus X player, mystery player, okay? Same points, same rebounds. Mystery players, about an assist and a half more. D'Lo shooting 30%. The other guy, 41%. Still not great. D'Lo only shot 11% from three, which is awful. The other player shoots 29%. Not great. D'Lo hit 1 3. Mystery player hit 1.6 threes. D'Lo defensive rating awful. The other player defensive rating awful as well. Can we show you who that player is? D'Angelo Russell in the playoffs as a Laker. Same guy. Same guy in terms of points and rebounds. You know, again, field goal percentage, especially three-point percentage, okay. So you're going to have him go from unplayable from three to unbelievably inefficient from three. That's the guy you're going to get consistently on a night-to-night basis. I didn't even think about the Western Conference final stats a year ago. They were awful. He's getting benched in series for Dennis Schroeder, who wasn't great himself against the Nuggets. Denver played. Jokic was awesome because he's Jokic. He's the best player in the world. But I didn't think Jamal Murray played that well. He distributed the basketball pretty well, and that's one thing I give Jamal Murray a ton of credit on, and we saw it last year in the finals, where if the shooting isn't working, he does a great job. I remember there was one game, I think it was game four against Miami, he had double-digit assists, wasn't terribly efficient for the field, but got other guys involved. We know his teammate Jokic is the greatest center of all time in that regard, in terms of getting other guys involved. But LeBron saw that. And I think when he saw, okay, I played awesome, AD played awesome, Jamal Murray didn't play well, we lead by three. He pulled back in the second half. Some could argue ran out of gas, and you can make that case, because the fact of the matter is, as great as LeBron James is at age 39, year 21, he can't go all out for 48 minutes like he did in his prime. It's just that the human body does not, basic anatomy, it doesn't make sense what LeBron's doing now. Certainly he's not going to replicate what he did just 5 years ago. Or 6 years ago, when I thought 2018 might have been the best version of LeBron. LeBron, the second half. We showed his first half stats. Here's the second half stats. More minutes, by the way. Played one more minute than he did in the first half. 8 points, three assists, three rebounds. Only it took four less shots from the field. Went 3 for 6, 0 for 2 from three, 2 for 3 from the free throw line. I think LeBron at that point saw, okay, I played amazing. I went all out. Okay, I need to pull back. Because if I go out in the second half, we are going to lose. Denver went in that big third quarter run, led by double digits, I believe, going into the fourth quarter. I can't do that. LeBron says, I'm going to, at this point, second half, we're going to feel it out. The Lakers got close up points. I think they pulled it to win six with about 5 minutes or so to go. But Denver always, especially in the second half, felt like they were in control of that basketball game. The Lakers weren't going to win that. So he's going to feel out the rest. And I picked Denver in five. And game two is actually tonight in the Rocky Mountains. If the Lakers are going to get a game, I actually think it's going to be tonight. Because LeBron pulled back in the second half. AD really didn't, but AD is not, he's not 39 years old. He's 31 years old, I believe. And we know coin flip Davis, which, by the way, has not really shown itself all season long. I haven't really been able to say that about AD, to his credit. I think LeBron in game two is going to go berserk. I think he's going to have about 2-3 stretches where it's like, oh, he looks like he's in year 10 again. He looks like 2013 LeBron James. Who is this guy? And then I think like 3 minutes to go in the fourth quarter, I'd say 3 minute stretch, LeBron's going to put together like 10 points in a row or something, kick it out to like a Rui or an Austin Reeves to knock down a 3-point shot. And they will seal a game in Denver. I think this series, is actually going to play out identically to the 2023 NBA Finals, right? So Denver's already won game one, and they did so in very similar fashion that they did in the finals last year. You know, they controlled the game throughout. They outplayed. Jokic was great. Game two, you know, maybe they think, hey, we've beaten the Lakers nine straight times. Let our foot off the gas. LeBron says, we have to win at least one road game. This needs to be the time we do it. Give ourselves rest before we go to LA. I think the Lakers steal game two in Denver tonight. And then the media, oh, there come the Lakers. Here comes LeBron. They got home court. And then Denver's going to go in LA, smoke them twice in games three and four. Game five is going to be a dogfight that Denver pulls off in the end. That's how the series is going to play out. But listen, Saturday night looked about, it's amazing. I've never seen this between two teams in my life. Like, styles of play, of course, that's repeatable if you're a good enough basketball team, which both of these teams are. But I've never seen where a team is on a hot streak against, again, obviously Denver's beaten the Lakers nine straight times. I've never seen a stretch up like that where every single game looks the same. Where it's, okay, the Lakers didn't play that bad and Denver just pulls away in the fourth quarter. Like it's not like Denver blew them out one game, and they might have in the first win of the nine-win streak. I haven't gone back to look at that, but by and large, these games are close, these games are tight, down the wire, and it doesn't matter. Because Denver has the better players, they have the better coach, they have a better starting five, a more consistent number two guy, which, again, AD's obviously a better player than Jamal Murray. But in the playoffs, you know, it's a legitimate conversation, and AD was clearly better than Jamal. And the Nuggets still won by double digits. So, I have no reason. And this isn't a situation where, you know, this is all one team so overwhelmingly better. No, they just execute better and they're better in the margins. And I go back to what I said on Monday. I was ridiculed for, especially when the Lakers beat the Pelicans in that playing game. It's like, oh, Bryce, you're going to be wrong. I said, no, I'm not. Once the Lakers got the 8 seed or 7-8 seed in the play-in tournament, I said they're done. And I bought into the Lakers as title contenders all season long, but I said they're done. Because if they lose to the Pelicans, and they were never going to throw that game, any suggestion that they should throw the game against New Orleans, that's ridiculous. That's nonsense. But if they lost that game, they were going to lose to Sacramento or Golden State, both teams that own them in the regular season. If they beat the New Orleans Pelicans, which they ended up doing, guess what? Your reward is facing the defending champions who swept you last year. So, Lakers fans, oh, D'Angelo Russell, oh my God, D'Angelo. Listen, man, D'Angelo Russell, Kurt Russell, Russell Wilson, it don't matter. Nuggets in five. It's that simple. They're better. What do you mean? The better team, that's what I love about the NBA, Major League Baseball. The best team wins the series. Now, baseball's a little different because some teams can be hot. Like, we saw the Braves win like 80-something games a few years ago, win the World Series. Like, a lot of it's how you're playing. The NBA, you kind of, as long as everybody's healthy, ready to go, you generally get the overall, I guess, average of what the players are, what teams are in the regular season. You tend to get that in the playoffs. Again, Jimmy Butler is the exception in one direction. James Harden's the exception in the other. As Joel Embiid, I'll talk about both Embiid and Harden later. But listen, Denver's better. There's nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that. Oh, and by the way, when it's over, LeBron's going to go to Golden State. I'm just telling you right now. All right. Transition now. Great to have everybody in on this beautiful Monday. Again, a ton of stuff. This is a great week. This is my favorite weeks of the sports calendar. We got NBA playoffs are right in flux. Again, most of those games of the weekend were blowouts, weren't terribly competitive. You know, the Cavs, Magic. I had Magic in seven until Cleveland win game one. Listen, don't overreact. Listen, the home team won every single game one over the weekend, which was pretty remarkable. But I think that's the first time that's happened in like a decade. So there you go. All eight teams winning the game, one of the first round series. But I picked Magic in seven. That is going to be one of the most difficult to watch seven game series that we've ever seen. The worst seven game series to me all time, at least in the 21st century, I don't go back to the 70s, is I remember Boston, Atlanta. That was the Zaza Pachulia, nothing easy quote after game six. Like that series, there was literally every team won in blowout fashion and the series went seven. And not saying that's going to be the case here, but these are going to be physical, low-scoring, ugly games. And again, the winner of this series gets to get knocked out by five or less against the Boston Celtics in the second round. I'll touch on Boston. I'll touch on some of the other series, not necessarily dedicate a segment to them right now, but touch on the other series that I'm not developing full segments into later on today's show. So definitely stay tuned for that. But it's draft week. Draft's just 72 hours from now. Very excited about that. We're going to be doing a draft live reaction show on the Grid Network. More information, more details to come very shortly on this show and other shows on the Grid. So definitely be sure to check that out. We're going to have a blast. We had a great show last year for the draft. Anticipate another one this year. We are going to transition the NFL, not for the draft. We'll do one draft topic at the end of the show, top of the next hour, talking about the New England Patriots. And I've sort of been back and forth on this, what they should do with the third pick. I've come to a resolute decision. I feel confident in what they need to do with that pick. So that at the end of the show. As far as guys who we know in the NFL right now, we know are good to great players in the NFL. Dak Prescott certainly fits that mold. And I said ever since I took a few weeks off from the show, a couple weeks after the Super Bowl, came back late March, so about a month ago, and the first show I did, I talked about Dak, and there have been some developments or maybe lack thereof for the Dallas Cowboys in terms of their offseason spending, in terms of heck, keeping the guys they've already got in Dallas, be it Prescott, be it CeeDee Lamb, be it Micah Parsons. CeeDee Lamb, for the record, right now is holding out. Like, if you don't pay CeeDee Lamb, what the heck are you doing? But the point is, I said about a week after I came back, the more I read, the more I looked, the more I was reading into reports from Dallas, Texas, for people on the ground at the Star, Dak's going to be a free agent in 2025. Unrestricted free agent. This will be his last year in Dallas, Texas. Like, I've been pretty clear on that. Well, we got a quote or a couple of quotes we're about to show you from Dak Prescott himself that I found by Dak standards, who Dak is the ultimate Mr. Cliche, say the right thing, turn the page. Like, the old cliches that we absolutely get tired of. We're like, hey, athletes, be authentic. And then when some athletes are authentic, we're like, no, give us the cliche answers. That's not me, but that's the general media consensus. But Dak, who's the ultimate cookie cutter answer guy, great with the media, nothing controversial. For him, I thought these two quotes were telling. Here's Dak Prescott at a charity event on Friday night in Dallas talking about his contract situation. Take a listen.
So no talk to that. Are you surprised with no talk to that?
No, I mean, I've been in conversation. I've talked to Jerry, and so I understand where we are, obviously. And Jerry's mentioned the same, so there's not any gray area in that sense. So, yeah.
Do you believe you'll be here forever playing based on your conversations with Jerry?
I'm not going to say I fear being here or not. I don't fear either situation, to be candid with you. I love this game and love to play and love to better myself as a player and my teammates around me. Right now it's with the Dallas Cowboys. It's where I want to be, and that's where I am, and that's the focus. And after the season, we'll see where we're at, and if the future holds that, then if not, we'll go from there.
He seems pretty resolute. Like, kind of, if it happens, it happens. If it doesn't, it doesn't. And he said one thing earlier in that first soundbite. He was talking about, hey, Jerry and I have met, and there's no gray area on where we stand. That tells me, to me, that confirms what Mike Florio has said, what all these reporters in Dallas have said, that they pretty much come to agreement. Mike Florio of Pro Football Talk was the first guy on this, and credit to him, that they pretty much come to agreement. Dak's going to play the last year of his contract, become a free agent in 2025, and then they'll go from there. Maybe Dallas will keep him, depending on what he does this year, what the Cowboys do this year. Someone else, if the Dallas Cowboys don't want him, plenty of other teams. Well, I counted about 12 teams that absolutely objectively need an upgraded quarterback coming into 2024. Did a segment on that weeks ago. Bryce's best 10 destination for Dak Prescott's on the YouTube channel. Be sure to check that out. That, to me, tells me that Dak's out. And I think it is, he had another quote that I don't think was a slip-up. Dak is a very measured, as I talked about earlier, guy at the podium with the media. And one reporter, I don't know who it was, but credit to him, asked him point blank, you want to be the highest paid player in the league? And he said, no, I don't want to be the highest paid player in the league necessarily. That confirms what I said a few weeks ago. I think Dak, if he stays in Dallas, because Dak's going to have to make a decision this upcoming offseason, in a similar fashion to what guys like Damian Lillard and Kevin Garnett made in the NBA, where it's, okay, I've been successful here. Oh, they haven't had playoff success. Well, guess what? They didn't have playoff success before Dak after Aikman, so let's put that aside. I've had success here. Finished second for MVP a year ago. I have, I think, three, four seasons with over 30 touchdown passes, multiple seasons with the passer rating over 100. We won a couple playoff games. I retired the greatest quarterback ever, sent him into retirement. I'm going to have to make a decision because this roster obviously is not capable of winning a Super Bowl. It's when I see the Vegas odds, Dallas is like sixth or seventh. I'm like, that's insane. That's insane to me. There's to me at least 12 teams that have a better shot to win the Super Bowl than the Cowboys. But be that as it may, Dak's going to have to say, okay, either I stay in Dallas for the money, because we know there's a lot of value wearing that star on your helmet, regardless of where the Cowboys at, regardless of how capable they are of competing for Super Bowls at this stage of where they're at. A lot of value wearing the star on your helmet. It's the most valuable sports franchise in the world, and I don't see that changing anytime soon. Jerry's a terrible GM. He's a heck of an owner in terms of marketing the Cowboys worldwide, and their the revenue they bring in represents that. Either I stay here and milk every dollar out of Jerry Jones in the process, or, and I think this is also where Dak's thinking, this is where he threw in the necessarily part of that quote, I take a little less and I go to a team that has shown they're capable of winning. Or they are putting together the pieces. They're being aggressive putting together the pieces to win a Super Bowl. Because need I remind you that people talk about, oh, Dak's a $59 million cap here. The Cowboys can't do anything. Yeah, they can't do anything this year. Because A, they won't. I mean, like, if you want to fix this issue, just extend Dak and spread the money out. It's a very simple business decision. But the fact that they restructured this last year without an extension told me, oh, he's out of there. They're trying to free up cap space. I think they signed some running back last week. Royce Freeman, I think is the guy's name. Like, he's not going to be a difference maker. But Dak Prescott could go to the Dallas Cowboys. Let's just say in theory, in a make-believe world, and say, I want a contract that pays me in totality over the 4-year duration of the deal, $4 million. That's it. Maybe a little less, $3.5, $4 million. That's it. And they still wouldn't do anything. You know how I know that? Because it essentially happened. Dak's rookie deal. Dak was making, make sure I have this right, about $600,000 on average per year, his rookie contract, okay? So I won't hold 2016 against Dallas because they didn't, that offseason, because they didn't know Dak was going to be their guy. After 2016, they knew, Romo retired, Dak's the guy. All that cap space paying a guy who's making $600K a year. Their big free agent signing was Nolan Carroll, 3 years, $10 million. Nolan Carroll was cut before September. Or before October, rather. 2018, big free agent signing, Allen Hurns. 2 years, $12 million. By the end of the season, Allen Hurns was wide receiver 4 on the depth chart. 2019, last year of the rookie deal, big free agent signing, Randall Cobb. 1 year, $5 million. Randall Cobb actually ended up being pretty good for them, but not a difference maker. By the way, should be noted, when Dak got $31.4 million on the franchise tag, Dallas was really aggressive in free agency. Here's what they signed. 2 defensive tackles by the names of Gerald McCoy and Don Terry Poe. Both were cut before the season started. In case you're wondering, who else did the Cowboys pay? Who was their highest paid offensive free agent that didn't come from the team prior in 2020? Well, glad you asked. It was Andy Dalton, Dak's backup. They've never been aggressive. They've never gone after star free agent players when they've been on the market, because that's not who Jerry Jones is in the 21st century. I have been saying this for years. We've seen it play out before. And this idea that, oh, now Dak's holding the Cowboys back. Oh my God, he wasn't even making $1 million the first 4 years of his career, and he still couldn't put the necessary roster. It's mind-boggling to me, but that's Dallas. And before you say, well, just let Dak walk. You know, the contract's off the books. We'll find another one. Well, don't forget that since Aikman retired, since the turn of the century, that both star quarterbacks that Dallas has had, they lucked into both. Tony Romo, make sure I have this right. 13 quarterbacks were selected in the 2003 draft. Not one of them was named Tony Romo. He was an undrafted free agent that Dallas said, hey, okay, you always taking in, like, I think 10, 15 undrafted guys, bring them in the franchise, see what happens. Tony was one of those guys, and because he had one of the greatest coaches ever, Bill Parcells, and one of the greatest offensive coaches of this generation, Sean Payton, Hey, he developed into a really good quarterback. 2016, okay? Seven quarterbacks were drafted before Dak Prescott. Dallas, for the record, it should be noted, wanted Paxton Lynch, almost traded in the first round to get Paxton Lynch at the end of the first round of that draft. They didn't. Denver did. Lived with regret it, obviously. In the fourth round, where Dak was drafted, he wasn't even the first quarterback on their board in the fourth round. It was a kid out of Michigan State named Connor Cook, who the Raiders stepped in front of Dallas to take themselves. So at that point, it's like, well, guess we got to take Dak. Well, of course, no disrespect to Connor Cook. I'm sure he's a nice guy and all that, but it was obviously not the career that Dak has had. Both quarterbacks Dallas got, they lucked into. And in between, Aikman, Romo, you remember some of the names, you lifelong Cowboys fans. Shout out to all y'all. You guys put up with a lot. Name here. Here's some of the Cowboys quarterbacks who started. Actually, all the Cowboys quarterbacks who started at least one game in between Troy Aikman and Tony Romo. They are Quincy Carter, Anthony Wright, Ryan Leaf, Clint Storner, Chad Hutchinson, Vinny Testaverde, Drew Henson, Drew Bledsoe. And the notable names, Bledsoe, Testaverde, they were way past their primes. Let's put it that way. So, careful what you wish for, Dallas. If Jerry lets Dak walk, which it looks like my wish is going to finally come true after years of supporting Dak Prescott and literally getting rid of my Cowboys fandom because of how they've treated Dak, Jerry in particular. If Jerry lets Dak walk, this sounds kind of grim, but he will sign a contract, so to speak. He will not win another Super Bowl in his lifetime. It's not going to happen. If he couldn't do it with Tony Romo, who dealt with crappy offensive lines his whole career in Dallas, yes, we know the fumble punt in Seattle. We know Tony Romo is a really good quarterback. I mean, if guys in that span, Rex Grossman got to a Super Bowl in that span. Joe Flacco put together a great run in the playoffs. Why? Because he had a stable organization and a stable defense with him. If some of these guys are able to get to Super Bowls, you're telling me that Tony Romo wasn't good enough to do it? You couldn't put the roster around Romo, who you, by the way, loved like a son, to the point where Tony literally named his actual son after Jerry Jones, one of his sons. And Dak, who, let's be real, you're not as tight with. If you can't win a Super Bowl with either of those two guys, you're telling me you're going to get another guy better? Really? If you're trying to get the next Patrick Mahomes, bad news. He's not coming anytime soon. Love Caleb Williams. Stylistically similar to Mahomes. I think Caleb's going to be great. He's not going to be Mahomes. The next guy you get, not going to be Tom or John Elway or Manning. So Dallas is essentially signing a warrant. Okay, we're not winning Super Bowls for 10, 15 years. Obviously, Dak's not going to play another 15 years, I assume. But that's where they're at. Meanwhile, Dak will have nothing but suitors, including, hopefully, a team in Pittsburgh, PA. You know, great defense, great coach, great pieces. A lot of cap space Pittsburgh Steelers have. Just saying. Dak, you know, good organization, amazing ownership, great fan base. Yeah, you're in a tough division, but you know what? NFC East was pretty tough. Philly got to a couple Super Bowls while you were there. Giants got to the playoffs multiple times. You got this. I mean, come on. The Steelers swept Cincinnati. Or they didn't sweep Cincinnati with Burrow, but they beat Cincinnati before with Joe Burrow and beating the Ravens with Lamar Jackson with bad quarterbacks. You tell me they can't do it with Dak? We'd love to have you in Pittsburgh, Dak. I'm telling you right now, we would love to have you. Nothing against Russell or Justin. Think Justin has high upside. Not sure if he'll meet it. Russell is what he is. He's better than what we had last year, so I'll take him. But you tell me Dak wouldn't take a little less to come to Pittsburgh? Say making 60 mil, say made 45, 50 mil, but Mike Tomlin, Omar Khan, the Steelers brass, Omar Khan, who's a wizard with the cap, with trades. Woo! Tell you, that's it. That's attractive to a quarterback of Dak's caliber. But careful what you wish for, Dallas. And I'm not talking about the fans, because I think a lot of the fans like Dak. I'm talking about talking to the front office. You don't find guys like this that easily. But knock yourself out. But last thing, too, and I forgot to bring this up, and then we'll move on. I think Dak Prescott should have three goals going into this season. Because I think, ironically, and this is odd to say, I think this is the first time in Dak Prescott's career, I don't really think he has any pressure on him. I'm dead serious. Dak, to me, has three goals. One of them, Dak, I'm sure in his mind, is like, hey, I'd love to win the Super Bowl. Of course, that's the goal of every, elite caliber or borderline elite caliber quarterback. Win the Super Bowl. Of course, that's the ultimate. Dallas can't win a Super Bowl. The roster's simply not good enough. They weren't that – the roster wasn't that good. Last year, I did pick Dallas to get there because I believed in Dak and CD. Obviously, that didn't work against Green Bay. Dak, listen, I'll be real. He didn't play well against the Packers at all. It's really his first bad playoff game outside of the Niners games, which Niners make most quarterbacks look bad other than Mahomes. But the point of all this is that, to me, Dak should have three goals going into 2024. Three. Let's put them up right here. Stay healthy, because Dak played a full season healthy last year. It's partly why he had the great season that he had. Put up elite statistical output, right? But put up, obviously, last year, 36 touchdowns. He was top five in basically every quarterback category that mattered. QBR, passer rating, touchdown interception ratio, touchdown passes, the whole bit. Dak was top five, sometimes leading the NFL in all of those. Number three, get to the playoffs. Like, it's not going to be a great look if Dak, in a contract year, misses the playoffs. The last time Dak had a great statistical output and did miss the playoffs was 5 years ago, but that was the Jason Garrett years. I'll criticize Mike McCarthy. He's a better coach than Garrett was. And so, hey, listen, Dak, throw for 31, two touchdowns. Don't turn the ball over just like you didn't do it a year ago. Maybe you could steal the division because I don't totally trust Philadelphia. Win 11, 12 games. You're not good enough to go deep in the playoffs because – let's be real, Detroit's way better. San Francisco's way better. Green Bay, we literally saw it, way better. And then leave. I think Dak knows internally, I'm out of Dallas anyway, so what's the pressure? Get better individually? Do what I got to do to either make money here or take just a hair less to go to a team that's capable of contending and putting a team around Dak Prescott? I don't know. Seems ideal to me. Man, it'd be awesome if it were Pittsburgh, though. Oh, my goodness. As a Dak fan, a Steelers fan, that would be amazing. All right, transitioning back to the NBA playoffs. Appreciate everybody stopping by to the show today. A lot of options out there, so greatly appreciate everybody stopping by. Be sure to subscribe if you have not already. We're trying to get to 1,000 subscribers. We were at 9, last I checked, like 954, so we're inching closer toward the 1K, so hopefully we can get there in short order. So if you've not subscribed, just takes a couple seconds. Hit that big red subscribe button, and you're part of the Carving Up family. So there you go. It's not like an actual like fan, but it's kind of, it feels like a family. Back to the NBA and to the playoffs, of course. We're going to be talking a lot of NBA playoffs over the next couple months. So Philadelphia and New York. Man, what a game that was. Madison Square Garden, the celebrities are out. You saw all the familiar faces. You saw Spike Lee, Tracy Morgan, Strahan. You saw all the familiar faces at MSG. You saw the stars route, Joel Embiid, Jalen Brunson, Maxey, notable coaches. One Nick Nurse has a championship. One Tom Thibodeau has multiple playoff appearances on his resume. And the game is close throughout. Knicks pulled away late and won by a final score of 111-104. And I probably by this point sound like the anti-Joel Embiid guy, which is not true. I think Joel Embiid is an awesome, awesome player. Two-time scoring champion, one-time league MVP. I've just been one of the few to actually tell the truth on Embiid in the sense that he's kind of James Harden-esque in the playoffs, where he goes from amazing in the regular season. I'm talking about prime Harden. Amazing the regular season and just god-awful in the playoffs. Now, his lows aren't quite as low as Harden's lows, where the guy just absolutely fell apart. But Embiid, it's like a slow, it's like death by a thousand cuts, essentially. Your season essentially suffers death by a thousand cuts. And in this game, first half, drops 18 points, is looking great. And then he gets injured. Well, Bryson, you can't hold the bad second half performance against him if he got injured. Okay, hang on a second. Wasn't Joel Embiid's knee in bad shape going into the game? Wasn't Joel Embiid laboring at the end of their play-in win against the Miami Heat? I did watch that game. It seemed like Joel Embiid didn't feel the greatest. Now, I imagine the re-aggravation didn't help matters, but that was the Sixers' opportunity to me to steal a road game at MSG. Like, I picked Knicks in six. It rhymes. It sounds good. And that's also, I think, the series going to play out from a matchup perspective. That was the game to steal. It's kind of like the Lakers. The LeBron saw what was going on in the first half. Jamal wasn't playing well. He was playing great. AD was playing great. Man, I'm going to go for the jugular. Oh, crap. We're down. We're only up three. That's we're probably not winning this game. And they pull back in the second half. In a similar sort of sense, Embiid came back, starts the second half, ready to go. Evidently, he was healthy enough to play. Jalen Brunson, who I'm a huge fan of and have become a huge fan of over the last couple seasons, what he's done in New York. I think he's an awesome leader. He's an efficient player. He's got a nice, you know, floater in the mid-range. He can shoot the three. He gets other guys involved and has been amazing, averaging like 31 points a game since Julius Randle went down. Like, the guy's been great. Jalen Brunson didn't play that well. Yes, he had 22 points with 7 assists, 7 rebounds, but 22 points on 26 shots, 1 of 6 from 3. You also look down the list. Dante DiVincenzo, 3 for 10. Josh Hart, 5 for 12. Now, credit to OG Anunoby. Efficient game and great defensively. And this kid McBride off the bench, Miles McBride, dropping 21 off the bench, 7 for 12 and 5 for 7 from 3. That was the game to steal. Brunson's inefficient. DiVincenzo isn't shooting well. Hart is a little off. You're at home. For the record, you know another reason that was the game to steal? Maxey may not play tonight. The game tips off in about an hour. I don't know if there's any updates on Tyrese Maxey. I don't see any on my phone right now, so we'll see. But Tyrese Maxey, there was a report from Chris Haynes that he's questionable tonight because he's, I think, feeling a little under the weather. So you may not have your second best player tonight. You're beat up. You were already beat up coming in. And Joel Embiid, it should be noted, scoreless in the fourth quarter. I believe he was 0 of 6 from the field, but he wasn't scoreless the first quarter. He didn't hit a field goal in the fourth quarter, but being the free throw merchant that he is, and let's be real, that's what he is in, you know, these playoff games, went 6 for 6 from the line to his credit. This is what you get from Joel Embiid. Oh, Bryce, he's hurt. He's hurt every playoffs. We have to start treating Joel Embiid or viewing him in a similar fashion that we do Kawhi Leonard. Although in Kawhi's defense, in his younger years, while he'd be beat up at the end of series, he was winning finals MVPs. And when he wasn't winning finals MVPs, he was going for 30, 40-point burgers in the 2017 playoffs, obviously 2019 playoffs, when the Raptors won the title. We've seen Kawhi be great. Kawhi's ability in the playoffs has never been under question. It's not like James Harden or Embiid where it's, man, we just don't trust him to show up. No, we trust Kawhi Leonard. We just don't trust him to be out there. That's the problem. Embiid's like a mix of Kawhi and Harden, and that's how we need to start viewing him. Like that to me, and I said this coming to the playoffs, no player has more pressure. You can argue Tatum, but Tatum, with all due respect, is not going. He may end up having a better career than Embiid just because of health, because of accomplishments. But right now, today, Embiid's a better player than Tatum. I think even Celtics fans would agree with that. Although if I had to start a franchise with one, I'd start with Tatum for a myriad of reasons. This being one of them, that I know Tatum's going to be there. No, Tatum's going to be reliable. No, Tatum's had some amazing playoff performances in do or die situations. I've never seen it from Embiid. Again, if I'm the only person in the world to say this, then I'll say it again. Joel Embiid is the only player in the history of the NBA to win Most Valuable Player and not go to the conference finals. We're not asking him to drag Philly on a bad leg or bad whatever in the last few years to a championship, which the Sixers haven't done since 1981. We're asking you simply, can he get to a conference finals? I mean, Trae Young got to a conference finals, and by the way, did so by beating you on your home floor in 2021. Jimmy Butler's been how many? Three times? Four times to the conference finals? I think three times in Miami, including beating you in 2022. The Toronto Raptors have who are in free fall right now, or a disaster, total rebuild. They've been to a conference finals more recently than you. You know why? Because they beat you in Game 7. Yeah, Boston, dead to rights in Game 6 a year ago. Dead to rights. Tatum was awful through three quarters. Had him on the ropes. At home, mind you, Tatum goes off in the fourth quarter and then drops a 50-burger on your head to send you home in Game 7, and you're awful in that game. Don't even record double-digit rebounds as a 7-foot-2 big. And last night, or Saturday night rather, we see it again. Not reliable, not efficient. Well, he's hurt. He's always hurt. And he was hurt coming into the game. Didn't seem to hinder him from scoring 18 and seemed to be healthy enough to come back in the game. Whenever LeBron's been hurt, oh, well, listen, he's still got it. If he's out there, we got to judge him by the similar standard. Let's do the same with Embiid then. He's an MVP player, right? We're not talking about, like, no offense, but Kristaps Porzingis. We're good player, really good player on the best roster in the league, but we're not going to hold Kristaps Porzingis to a standard. A guy who, by the way, has an injury history where we're like, can't trust him in the biggest moments. Not to the level we can this guy, Joel Embiid. He's still great. If Joel Embiid's the second best player on a contending team, man, you are in great shape. It's the very reason that I said Philadelphia to me might be the most attractive destination for LeBron. He gets to go back to the weak East. Embiid's his number two. Tyrese Maxey is your third best player. Oh my gosh. Nick Nurse coaching. They've got the cap space due to a brilliant move by Daryl Morey to move James Harden to Los Angeles. More on Harden in just a second. You cannot and will not ever win a championship with get to a finals. As we say here today, get to a conference finals if Joel Embiid's your best player, because physically you can't rely on him, and therefore, because of his lack of physical reliability, you don't get the consistency in the postseason. Game one was a perfect representation of that. Now, Maxey may not be maybe out. If he is in, it will be hampered. Embiid's still hurt. Knicks, to me, feel like they'd go up 2-0 in this series. I think Philadelphia probably wins games 3 and 4. Philly has faced a lot of series. I remember when they played the Heat in 2022, they were down 2-0, Embiid was hurt. They won the next two at home, lost the next two to end the series. That feels a little bit like how the series will play out. But this is what I expected from Philadelphia. It's what I expected from Embiid. The pieces around him, Maxey's an excellent number two, Tobias Harris, Kelly Oubre. Paul Reed's a good backup center, and Nick Nurse is a championship-winning head coach who's an upgrade over every coach you've had in your career, and you still couldn't get it done because you can't rely on you physically and just in general in the postseason. That's the reality of Joel Embiid, and we have to come to accept it. I know that's probably not the most popular thing to say in Philadelphia, although as much as I criticize Philadelphia sports and their fans get on my nerves, they're certainly realists when it comes to their athletes not performing up to par. Philadelphia, Boston, New York, that sort of northeast area of the country that, tends to be maybe over harsh, but in some respects, it's like, hey, listen, they call it the way they see it. And I think Philadelphians might actually agree with me on this. I don't know. Maybe they can let me know here in the comments live or in the comments on when this is clipped on YouTube. To Joel Embiid's former teammate. Here we go again. Clippers, 109-97 over the Dallas Mavericks. Here they come. No Kawhi Leonard. And we blow out the Dallas Mavericks. The Clippers won by 12. To Dallas' credit, they made it somewhat respectable at the end. Both Luka and Kyrie went for over 30 and did it on pretty efficient shooting, especially Kyrie, who's always been an efficient player in his career. But the Clippers got out to a blistering start early and were able to hold Dallas's mini runs off late in the fourth quarter and win the game and take a 1-0 series lead. And I can hear it today. It's a new James Harden. The one thing the Clippers needed, when they were falling short in the playoffs year after year, when Kawhi went down and Paul George was beat up, they didn't have a true point guard. James Harden provides that. Well, on paper, yeah, he does. The reality is, let me double check. Was this a playoff game? Oh, yeah, okay, it was a playoff game. And James Harden was great. We can show you James Harden. Do we have it? James Harden's numbers against the Dallas Mavericks. 28-8-2, 28 points, 8 assists, 2 rebounds, 47% from the field, 54.5% from three. That, my friends, is a very good, I would dare say, elite performance that we've seen before. Never forget, just a year ago. Let's not be prisoners of the moment. Just a year ago. We talked about Embiid, how he played against Boston. Well, the first four games of that series against the Boston Celtics, Embiid missed game one in Boston. And Harden went for, I think, 45 to win the game. We can show you. So here's Harden's numbers yesterday. 28 points, 8 assists, 2 rebounds. 47 for the field, 54 from 3. Can we show you his numbers for the first four games against the Boston Celtics? Oh, my goodness. Outside of a slight tick in rebounds and a slight tick down in three-point percentage, identical. 28 points, sound familiar. 7.5 assists, about the same. 6.3 rebounds, so 4 more rebounds than what he had yesterday. 46% for the field, 47% yesterday, 41% from three. Obviously, 54.5% yesterday is not sustainable, but 41% from three is still very good. But what did Harden do the last three games of a series? Games 5 through 7, he was about as awful as you can possibly be. 13-8-7, but on 31% from the field and 15% from three-point range. We're a game in. Yes, Harden tends to do this every postseason. He comes out as a big scoring performance, and you know, they win a game that maybe we didn't expect them to win. Listen, I thought the Dallas Mavericks were going to win yesterday. I picked Dallas in 5. Not, I don't know totally if Dallas is going to, you know, win 4 straight to win the series. They may. I think Dallas is the second best team in the West, but we'll see how it plays out. Still think Dallas is absolutely going to win the series, but hey, afternoon in L.A., Staples Center. I hate the Lakers, but home of the Lakers or crypto.com or whatever it's called now. But he's hitting the step back. He's crossing up Luka. Just wait. Knowing Harden's history, you think that's sustainable? 28 points on 47 from the field and 54% from three. You tell me that's sustainable given Harden's history? You think Kawhi Leonard being out over the course of a 7-game series, we'll see if or when he comes back. You think that's not going to make a big difference? You're telling me that Jason Kidd, and Ty Lue's an awesome coach, top three in the NBA to me. But you think Jason Kidd's not going to make adjustments? That he's not going to get Harden involved in the pick and roll more? Listen, I'm watching that game. I'm watching the first half. I'm like, oh, here we go again. I even saw a tweet from NBA Central, who's a great follow on Twitter, no question, but they showed Harden hitting a step back and one and saying, playoff Harden's here. I'm like, playoff Harden? No, that ain't playoff Harden. That's regular season Harden. Yeah, and he's hitting the step back and ones, getting whatever he wants at will. But as a series drags on, as coaches make more adjustments, especially now with Harden, who cannot create the separation that he used to create back in Houston. He's gotten older, doesn't take care of his body, and listen, it's cliche, but oh, is it true? Your body will treat you how you treat it. And over the course of his career, shutting down strip clubs, coming into seasons out of shape, tends to wear on you. And now James Harden's in year 15, and I'm not going to say he's a shell of himself, what he used to be, because at his prime, James Harden, for as much as I criticize him, man, was averaging 35 a game. I mean, he was a scoring extraordinaire. But significantly lesser version of what he used to be. So if that Harden, if prime Harden, well, he's got Paul George. He may have Kawhi Leonard. He had prime Chris Paul with him. Had 3-2 lead in the Warriors. Gagged game 6 and really gagged game 7. He had Kevin Durant. I love Paul George. I hope he's a Warrior next year if LeBron doesn't come to Golden State. Kawhi, finals MVP. He had Kevin Durant, who basically dropped 250 burgers in games 5 and 7 of the second round series against Milwaukee. Harden gagged both games. It was a no-show. So this idea that now 15 years in, after 14 years, or really if you want to talk about ever since he's been the man back to his days in Houston, so about 10, 11 years of evidence, all of a sudden it's going to change. Maya Angelou has one of my favorite quotes in the world. When someone shows you who they are, believe them. That's what Harden does. He fools us. Well, doesn't fool me, but fools some in the general basketball public to start a series. And as it wears on, time goes on, he's not the same guy. Matter of fact, he folds like a lawn chair, like a cheap lawn chair at the 4th of July party. That's what he is. So, hey, Clippers fans, all 13 of you, enjoy this victory. The 13 Clippers fans, the AI fans they put in the building yesterday, enjoy it. But Luka, lest we forget, you know what Luka Doncic has done to the Los Angeles Clippers in this now 12 playoff games against LA? What is he averaging? Like a 30-point triple-double? Just wait. If the time is coming, I will be here when it's ready to go. And one of the dumbest trades in modern NBA history that was made this November, where the Clippers got Harden, sent all their assets to the Sixers, and the Sixers created cap space. They have Embiid, Maxey, Harris, and they could add another player of a LeBron James' caliber, of a Paul George's caliber, for the record. And the Los Angeles Clippers, who don't have a single draft pick, I think for the next 5 years or so, will be stuck with a Paul George, who's a free agent, a Russell Westbrook, who's a free agent, and a James Harden, who's a free agent. Just wait. Let it bake. Let it play itself out. What I love about sports, what I love about life, we do it. People want to put us, it's a microwave society. No. You got to sit, take a deep breath, let it play itself out. Come game 5, 6, if there's a game 7, old playoff James. Oh, he'll be back. He never shows up at the beginning of series. Harden in the playoffs, people forget. It's his worst playoff performances don't come in game 2s. They come in 5, 6, 7. We don't have to. We can do that list when the day comes in like 2 weeks or less. So there you go. Clippers fans, get excited while you can. But you're going to be joining the Golden State Warriors. You and your counterpart, Lakers, will be joining the Golden State Warriors in Cancun in short order. So it gives me some enjoyment right now as a Warriors fan. Because, man, I'm missing Steph Curry in the playoffs. It sucks. All right, quickly before we move on to our last topic. This is a little NFL-ish. Usually during the NFL season, I do 4 topics. Most obviously in the heart of the NFL season, maybe we'll have an NBA story or college football or something. But by and large, 4 NFL topics. And then before I get into my last one, which is usually a prediction for the upcoming game, Monday, Thursday, or Sunday, or Saturday during, you know, late in the season, I look at the rest of the games, give sort of like a short recap. So this feels a little close to home, so to speak, for the NFL season. But as far as the other playoff games, we didn't do a segment around Cleveland beating Orlando 97-83 in game 1 of that series. Again, 97-83, like that's about how these series are going to look. We're not going to see a whole lot of 100-point outputs because both teams, ain't the Cavs, both the Magic are second in defense, the Cavs are 6th. The Magic are 22nd in offense, the Cavs are 16th in offense. So both teams are I think they're 16th in offense. They're not a good offensive team. Both teams are really skilled, really long, you know, on the defensive end. Offensively, they struggle. Like, if Paolo doesn't have it going for the Magic, and Paolo was solid, first playoff game, he's a young kid, he's going to get better. Did drop 24, pretty efficient shooting, but that's about how this series is going to look. I still got Magic in 7. Timberwolves over the Suns. We got our first big trash-talking moment of the playoffs. Anthony Edwards going right at his idol, Kevin Durant, growing up. And KD himself, he was great. 31 points, 11 for 17, 2 for 2 for 3. KD was great. Devin Booker, on the other hand, Devin Booker tends to be bad. Again, a little James Harden-esque. At least Booker's gotten to a team to the finals as the guy with CP3, I might add. But Booker tends to be bad in like those game 6, game 7 closeouts at home. But I mean, that I thought it was game 6, game 7 Booker here. 18 points on 16 shots. Like, yikes. Beal wasn't the greatest, although he didn't take so many shots, but Anthony Edwards, he went on that third quarter shooting spree, making shots, knocking down three-pointers all over the place, the mid-range getting to the paint. He finished with 33 points and was, you know, canned after the game. Like, you know, I trash talked KD, and KD is the ultimate basketball purist, and that's one of the things I respect so much about the guy. Like, the guy, in a league that has LeBron, Steph, Giannis, Jokic, well, especially Jokic, I don't think there's a single human being that plays in the NBA today that loves the game more than Kevin Durant. Loves basketball. We got to point to multiple examples of that. The fact that, you know, there was the people criticizing back to his days in college, back to his days at Texas playing under the great Rick Barnes, who now coaches my Vols. And it's like, man, KD's too skinny. He's not going to be able to. And he said, listen, I work on my game, not my body. Like, KD's going to be in shape. KD's going to be ready to go. And he's naturally, because he is 6'11", he's going to be naturally stronger than a lot of guys. But KD's like, I'm going to work on my crossover, my mid-range, my three-point shot, be effective on defense. 1 year, KD was top 5 in block shots. 1 year with the Warriors. So that's the KD's a basketball purist. KD loves the game. He's a gym rat in every sense of the word. And I think I saw where Michael Jordan texted Stephen A. Smith, and he said something like, that brother is special, talking about Anthony Edwards. So, listen, if you got MJ's respect, you know, who knows? Maybe in 10 years when Anthony Edwards has, like, 2 NBA championships and a bunch of MVPs, and we're saying, hey, is Anthony Edwards in the GOAT discussion? Maybe Jordan will put out another documentary. Who knows? He did it last time with LeBron. You never know. By the way, Rudy Gobert hitting a turnaway, fadeaway jump shot. I did not see that coming. Did you see where Rudy Gobert, by the way, was voted as the most overrated player in the NBA? I mean, I agree. Like, I'm telling you, I agree. But it's interesting. But this was by players, by the way. This is a players' poll. We may talk a little bit more about the other categories on Wednesday's show. Maybe do a carving up the context on that. We'll see. What else do we have? Okay, I already talked about the Knicks and Lakers series. Celtics walloping Miami. Again, this is going to be a quick series. Boston, to me, given the draw, how the back bracket, you know, fell into place for them, getting a Miami team without Jimmy Butler, getting either Orlando, who's inexperienced, or Cleveland, who, again, I don't think they're going to get Cleveland, but we'll see, but hasn't won a playoff series without LeBron James since 1993. Going into the Eastern Conference Finals, whether they face the Knicks, Philadelphia, Milwaukee, whoever they face, Boston should not have more than two playoff losses going to the Eastern Conference Finals, and I don't think they will. They may sweep Miami. I took Boston in five just because out of respect for Heat culture. I mean, maybe they'll have a hot shooting night in Miami and get like game four or something when they're down 3-0. But yeah, it's a mismatch. You saw it yesterday. Boston was red hot from 3-point range. Hit 45% of the 3-pointers. That'll work any day of the week. We had the Bucks knocking off the Pacers. That was a weird. I'm a Damian Lillard fan. That was one of the weirdest performances I've ever seen from a superstar in the playoffs. So Dame goes crazy, drops 35 in the first half, doesn't score in the second half. It was like a reverse. Remember 5 years? Well, I certainly remember, but 5 years ago with my Warriors when Steph, it was game six against Houston. Kevin Durant had just suffered the first of his injuries, lower leg injuries. And Steph didn't score in the first half and then dropped 33 on Houston's head in the second half. Like this Dame performance is literally the reverse of that. Now, it was game one, and to Milwaukee's credit, they did beat the Pacers. I still think the Pacers win this series. Dame's not going to give you 35 in the first half or zero in the second half. It's going to kind of even out to about 26, 27. If Giannis comes back at all in what will be his final season in Milwaukee, I've said that for weeks. I truly believe that. He's going to be hampered. He's going to be beat up. The chemistry with him and Dame doesn't work. If you look at Dame's numbers, they're actually better without Giannis. So the two of them just don't fit together. Still think Indiana's going to win this series. They kind of, you know, they closed the gap to a degree in the second half, but just weren't able to pull away. But I still got the Pacers in six. And finally, the Thunder of the Pelicans. Listen, that was, you could tell that was Oklahoma City's first playoff game. Obviously, the youngest team in the playoffs, their average age is like 23. SGA played really well. Chet was really good on the defensive end. But other guys, you know, they were a little nervous, a little jittery. The Oklahoma City crowd, they haven't seen a playoff game at whatever their arena is called. It used to be Chesapeake. I don't forget what it's called now. But they haven't seen a game there in like 5 years. I think it's Paycom Center, if I'm not mistaken. But yeah, they're antsy. They're juiced up. They're ready to go. And props to the Oklahoma City Thunder. It was a tight game, close. SGA some big shots late. As Chet Holmgren hit a free throw that put the Thunder up to. CJ McCollum had a great look for the win. He got one of the guys on a pump fake, leaned in for a three-pointer that would have won the game and missed. But I said Oklahoma City in five before the series started because I just don't think Pelicans with Ingram coming back, not fully healthy, not fully ready to go. Zion, if he comes back at all, I assume will be a shell of himself. So it just sucks. We still haven't seen Zion in the playoffs. Like, golly, I hope he comes back. I hope he comes back and delivers like 140 burger. I really hope we see that. But impressive win by the Thunder, 94-92 to go up 1-0 in that series. We have three games tonight. Magic Cavs, I'm going to go the Magic tonight. We got Sixers Knicks. I'm going to go Knicks. We did just get an update, it looks like. Chris Haynes says that Embiid will play against the Knicks with the and Tyrese Maxey will also play. Okay, that's huge. Because Maxey was initially questionable. He was sick. Or under the weather. I don't know if sick is the right word, but certainly under the weather. But, okay, Joel, what you got for us? Prove me wrong. Prove me wrong, man. Listen, if Embiid comes out there, destroys the Knicks, steals home court advantage, okay. Okay, then let's see what you got beyond that. I don't think he will. Don't trust him at all. I got the Knicks, though. I think Brunson plays better. That plays more efficient, gets more help from DiVincenzo, from Hart, and the Knicks win tonight. Lakers Nuggets, again, this may shock people, you know, Nuggets in five, but I think this is the game the Lakers get. Denver's going to be like, again, human nature sets in certain regards where you beat a team nine straight times. You're like, we can bring our B-plus game and be good. Whereas the Lakers are, man, the momentum perceived momentum that the Lakers could create if they win this game, tie the series 1-1. They finally beat Denver in a game after nine straight losses. They steal home court, and the media will overreact. Oh, here come the Lakers. Denver will then, you know, knock them out in games 3 and 4 and then close the series out in Denver in 5. But actually, I think the Lakers win tonight. I think this series plays out exactly like last year's NBA Finals did. Nuggets win game 1 at home, lose game 2 at home, win game 3 and 4 on the road, win game 5 at home to close the series out. That's what I think. So there you go. So give me Magic, Knicks, Lakers. That's what I got. But it's still all day, every day. Nuggets of 5. All right. NFL draft topic. It is NFL draft week. And so I've said that obviously we know Caleb Williams is going number 1 in the Bears. I was initially pretty confident that Jaden Daniels, especially given what I've been hearing, that he was going number 2 to Washington, although now the betting odds have shifted slightly in favor of Drake May. Jaden Daniels' agent came out and said, hey, I didn't like how they brought all of these quarterbacks in at the same time, which a little fishy. Maybe he's trying to force his way out of going to Washington, which I would tell Jaden Daniels, you'd rather go to Washington, New England, buddy. Washington ain't great, but they got some pieces. They've got a proven head coach, a proven OC. Like, I go there before I go to New England, man. Like, careful. But nonetheless, to me, where the draft gets very interesting is the New England Patriots, because Washington's going to select a quarterback. We don't know who it is for certain. It looks like it's going to be between May or Daniels. What do the Patriots do? So we'll show the draft order. I've put this graphic up for a few months now. So New England at 3. You have the Cardinals behind them. They're going to take Marvin Harrison Jr. if the Patriots don't. You have the Chargers, who are probably going to trade back. I think with Minnesota, that to me feels like a foregone conclusion at this point. Harbaugh wants more picks. They need to rebuild, you know, some parts of the offensive line. They need a nice receiver. It's a great receiver draft. Minnesota's looking for a quarterback. That to me, Chargers are going to trade with the Vikings. That feels somewhat inevitable. Giants, we'll see. Titans are going to select Joe Alt, I think, the best tackle in this draft under Notre Dame. Falcons to me probably select an edge rusher. That's why I think they'll go. But I've been debating. I've even done segments on the show. What do the Patriots do? Because they are, I think, without question, one of the 3 worst rosters in football. They need a quarterback. The receiving core is awful. Marvin Harrison Jr. is available. Malik Nabers. Roma Dunze. Again, as much as I love those other 2 guys, I think Marvin Harrison Jr. is a generational talent at the receiver position. And even more so than Caleb is at quarterback. See, they could go with him, and I would not fault that pick at all. You're getting one of the great receiver talents. Obviously, we know what his dad did, Marvin Harrison Sr., Hall of Famer. I'd trade back. And I'll tell you why I'd trade back is that, in theory, this obviously isn't always the case. As a matter of fact, it's rarely the case. But in theory, the best 2 quarterbacks are off the board before the Patriots are on the clock. Marvin Harrison Jr. will absolutely help them, but he does play a dependent position, and I like Jacoby Brissett. Bailey Zappi was always better than Mac Jones, said it for 2 years. You need a guy better than those 2 to get him the ball. And the Patriots roster, as it stands today, is the defense is okay. The offense is a mess. O-line, running game, weapons, court, it's a mess. It's a full-on rebuild. Are you sure that any of these guys, with the exception of Caleb Williams, because Caleb to me is Andrew Luck-ish, where he could step into a situation, it's like, okay, we could go to the playoffs. Now, in the AFC, I don't think they could go to the playoffs with Caleb Williams, but they would absolutely win 6-7 games. I think unquestionably. They were competitive in games with Mac Jones at quarterback. You're telling me with a guy who's more dynamic, better arm, more mobile, more accurate, better decision maker, better leader than Mac Jones, that's not questionable. Outside of that, McCarthy, I think, would be a mess. And I like McCarthy. He seems to be more like the game manager type, like a lesser version of Brock Purdy. You ask him, hey, J.J. McCarthy, you go from games where you throw 8 passes and hand the ball off oh my gosh, I'm forgetting the running back's name. Oh, the guy, Blake Corum. Hand the ball off to Blake Corum 40 times a game. Carry one of the worst rosters in the league. Bryce Young, who I think is absolutely a better talent than J.J. McCarthy, couldn't do that in Carolina, who to me has similar issues to New England. This is not a 1-year fix. And there are some other really good quarterbacks in next year's draft, because the fact of the matter is all 6 of these guys, the 6 guys that we're talking about, Caleb, Drake, Jaden Daniels, Bo Nix, Michael Penix Jr., and J.J. McCarthy, all six of the guys, those guys are not going to hit. I think Caleb is. I love Michael Penix Jr. Drake May, if he hits a ceiling, which I'm skeptical of, can. Jaden Daniels has the athletic ability. If JJ goes to the absolute perfect system, he can win games. Bo Nix, similar. But all six of them are not going to hit in the NFL. It's just not how it works historically. Let me guys next year have an opportunity to, because the fact of the matter is the Patriots are not going to be good next year. They're going to be a 4-5 win team at best. So they'll be high up in the draft once again to take a quarterback. Accumulate picks. Rebuild your offensive line. And again, there's some really good tackles in this draft. Even after Joe Alt, you could take one of them. You could maybe take, if there's the guy, I think Edwards, I believe is the guy's name at LSU. Nice receiver. You could take him. Rebuild the offensive line. Add some weapons. And do the same strategy next year. Except, use your first round pick on a quarterback. If they take Marvin Harrison Jr., I won't fault them for it because of the generational talent that I think he is. I think taking a quarterback, given how awful the state of the franchise is a little risky. People say, well, what about Houston last year? Houston was a mess. Like, let's not do revisionist history. Like, none of us saw the Texans, except for my buddy Ryan Flowers. He was on the Texans for years. Shout out to Ryan, Clutch Sports Talk here in the Grib. Ryan, for years, like, just the Texans, just wait, and they get the guy. And he was right. The Texans are now one of the favorites to come out of the AFC this year. And CJ was obviously the missing piece, as was D'Amico Ryans. But they have pieces. They were. I mean, I remember one game, or two games, they almost beat the Cowboys in Dallas. My dad was actually at that game with, like, Jeff Driscoll at quarterback, and they almost knocked off the Chiefs in overtime in the season where the Chiefs won their second Super Bowl. So it's like you saw the pieces. You saw flashes from certain receivers, and they just needed to, again, hit on more draft picks and add the guy, CJ Stroud. But that came over the course of, it, ironically, some New England guys working that Houston front office that Belichick and Kraft could have kept. But it took them a few drafts. Took them time. Then they got CJ Stroud and then exploded. And now they are what they are this year. If the Patriots want to have a similar trajectory where they get a Stroud-like guy, it's not going to come this year. See, if you drop CJ Stroud in New England, they're better because Stroud's obviously way better than any of the guys they had last year, but they're not a playoff team. They're not. The Texans barely got in with way more talent than New England. So, again, if they don't take Marvin Harrison Jr., I think you have to trade. I simply don't think you could put one of these quarterbacks in a situation where it's a long rebuild. You're trying to develop them, but they're also out there getting their teeth kicked in on a week-to-week basis. I just don't think that's the smart strategy to develop the guy that you hope can get you back to the mountaintop. So, unless you take Marvin Harrison Jr., which I would not fault because he's great, stealing from Arizona, I'd trade back. Chargers are going to do it. I think the New England Patriots should as well. This is interesting. Wow. According to Shams Charania, this is the second offseason I think this has happened. The Charlotte Hornets are interviewing J.J. Redick for their head coaching job, sources tell The Athletic and Stadium. The 15-year NBA vet and former Duke star has shown an interest in making a coaching jump in recent years. Well, look, it's better than Steve Clifford. When they brought Steve Clifford back a couple of years ago, because I remember Kenny Atkinson, who's an assistant with the Warriors, was going to take the job, but then he decided, hey, I want to keep my family in the Bay Area. I'm going to stay in Golden State. And then they pivot to Steve Clifford, who had already failed. It's like, Which we know Charlotte ownership has been bad for almost the franchise's entire existence. But I think Redick could be a good hire. This guy, I mean, listen, I don't know if great podcasting necessarily translates to great coaching, but we know J.J. Redick's basketball IQ is second to none. It's why, I mean, why do you think LeBron James is doing a podcast with J.J. Redick? Not that there's not other smart players, but he's a Duke guy. He's pretty smart. So there you go. All right, fun show. NBA playoff stuff, NFL draft. There you go. All right. That is all the time we have for today's show. Appreciate everybody stopping by. As always, be sure to catch Carving Up Live on Wednesday, the eve of the draft, at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific time, right here on Twitter, as well as the Carving It Up YouTube channel and the Grid Network YouTube channel. Of course, be sure to like, share, comment, and take 2 seconds out of your day. Hit that big red subscribe button down there. Helps the channel grow exponentially. If you have subscribed, thank you so, so much for your support. We greatly appreciate it. We surpassed about 950 subscribers recently. We're trying to get to 1,000 in short order. So if you have subscribed, thank you so much. Please tell your friends about it, your family about it, everybody you know about it. If you have not subscribed, hey, if you're on YouTube, it just takes a couple seconds. That big red subscribe button down there, that one, yeah, the one I'm pointing to. Hit it, and you're part of the Carving It Up family. It's a familial type of feeling carving up live. And just as importantly, I might add, go subscribe to The Grid Network. That's GRYD, The Grid Podcast Network, right here on YouTube, as well as any and everywhere you get your favorite podcasts via Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, any and everywhere you get your favorite podcasts. We've got them. Digital, anywhere you get your podcasts on YouTube. Also, articles, Patrick Brown writing some great stuff on The Grid Network's website. We dare to be different on The Grid Network. All right. See you on Wednesday. 8 o'clock spot should be coming tomorrow or on Wednesday. The Grid Network draft live reaction show on Thursday night around draft time. Again, we'll give you more details as we're able to bring them to you. But definitely be sure to check that out in about 72 hours. The draft is nearing. We are in the midst of the NBA playoffs. This is one of my favorite times of the sports calendar. So we'll have a ton to talk about over the next couple of months. So we will see you again on Wednesday. Please stay safe out there. Please be sure to take care of your physical as well as your mental health. And please be sure to contact your local state representatives and senators to demand change for gun violence in America. Whether you lean right, left, center, this is an issue that impacts us all. And no matter what anybody on either side of the aisle tries to fool you with, there's no one solution to the issue. There's a lot of things that can be done to prevent this and who knows, maybe even to stop it. But we've got to do our part. We've got to vote. We got to make sure our lawmakers know how we feel about this particular subject. All right. I will see y'all on Wednesday. Carving up the context. Bryce's best 10. More NBA playoff stuff. More NFL draft stuff. Cannot wait. I will see you then. God bless y'all. Peace out. Yeah, I think the Lakers steal tonight. But they're still going out in 5, though. Thanks so much for watching the show on YouTube. And be sure to go click that big red subscribe button and check out the other clips and full shows from Carving It Up Live, as well as our other incredible content creators here on The Grid Network.